Phil Asmundson, and I'm a partner with Deloitte. We have the pleasure of presenting something we call the State of the Media Democracy. This is a presentation we give to a lot of the C-suite CEOs in particular like this, because it looks at how content is being consumed, what products and services, or what products are being consumed over, what subscription services consumers are subscribing to, and really takes a look at how the whole landscape is changing because of those devices and subscriptions. As you can see, we'll go back real quick. The hashtag Media Democracy, you'll see that on a lot of slides. What that means is it's come from that Media Democracy report. If anyone's tweeting anything, you should probably reference that. Because we have another report called the Deloitte Tablet Study, which, as you can see, the hashtag Deloitte Tablet. That's a brand new study, in fact, just fielded a couple of weeks ago. So, quite honestly, you're the first public group to ever see any of those slides, and so we'll try to walk through some of those as well. I'll give you one warning on the slides before we jump into this, is they tend to be a little data intense. There's a lot of information on each slide. Some of it's a little bit annoying because nothing's changed, really, so there's nothing to really see there, but it's good to see the depth at which we go in. So we've circled a lot of numbers, and we'll point out some other numbers which we think are relevant trends to look at. As I mentioned, my name is Phil Asmundson. I lead our U.S. media and telecommunications practices here in the U.S. I'm also a global telecom leader. And Rob, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Rob Underwood, based out of New York. I help Phil with a lot of our research, offer an account strategy for the media entertainment group. I'm also responsible for some of the programs we're doing, especially in New York, but also nationally around the startup and venture capital community. We're trying to do a lot more with the startup community, especially in New York. So sometimes if any of you are in New York, you may see my name associated with that. And again, you see our Twitter handles.
Okay, let me talk a little bit about Media Democracy. Can you hear me? No, can't hear me. Okay, I'll get the microphone. Usually people say I talk too long and I talk too much.
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about Media Democracy here. This is our sixth year doing this, and it's been a lot of fun doing it because we've seen a lot of different changes. And because of that, what the data you'll see will be trends over time, as well as information by generations. And the generation information is quite startling in some cases to see the differences. Just as the different generations are here at this show, I fall in the baby boomer category. We were talking earlier about the distribution of people here. It tends to be more people in what, under 30 in what would be either the young Xers or the millennials. And we'll get to a cut at all of that in a moment. It is fielded by an independent group that we utilize, and it was fielded in September to mid-October of last year. All the data is weighted back to the most recent census data. So, in effect, it should be representative of what the United States is. We ask companies to help us adjust this survey over time. And so what you'll find is there'll be some categories where there'll be little dashes, which just means we just didn't do it in prior years. You might see some little carrots in the slides. What that means is there just isn't a big enough population to reach any conclusions on. Often that happens to be the oldest generation that just doesn't have some of the electronic devices and is doing the types of things that you're seeing at this show.
Yeah, so a little bit about the tablet study as well. So the tablet study is, again, our independent research group, Harrison Group, worked with us on it. The purpose of the tablet study is, well, first of all, I should say about the tablet study is that it is not only about tablets. It's really about devices, and we call it the multi-device media consumption study. But it looks at a number of different trends that are unearthed by the State of the Media Democracy that we wanted to go deeper on, and especially in the way in which people consume media. And the way in which there are different patterns of media consumption based on their device ownership, and to look at some of the correlations around that. Again, it spans the same four generations and five age group breakouts that we use for the State of the Media Democracy. Now, this data was fielded from late January to mid-February, so the tablet data is much more recent, and it's two distinct surveys. Consumers, about 1,900 U.S. consumers, of which about 1,000 were tablet owners, and business, it's 1,200 U.S. business users across business sizes. The one thing I would say about the tablet study is it certainly does probably slightly over-index to what are sometimes referred to as the digital elite, which are people who tend to have more devices And you know, that tends to also skew thus towards some kind of a different demographic around household income, et cetera.
Okay, and just before getting the data, here you can see the generation. So you have mature 65 to 75. We have the baby boomers, 46 to 64 generation, X from 49 to 45. And then you have the millennials. And we split the millennials into two groups, 14 to 22. Typically, that age group is still at home or in college. So, you know, hasn't ventured out on their own yet. While the leading millennials are those 23 to 28-year-olds. They have their first job. They're out of the house. In some cases, you'll see they tend to be much more cost conscious. They find workarounds, like over-the-top solutions to things like cable. In fact, some of the cable companies who see this, the thing they're most concerned about is what they term, not us, cable nevers, that there's a generation coming along that really, quite frankly, is very comfortable never having cable television because they find other ways to get content. And you'll see that in a part that Rob will do called Content Anywhere. So let's jump into some data. These first couple slides are just a little bit of fun to explore what the slides really mean. I'm going to try to get out of the way and go all the way over here if I can. I think I can, yeah. So, you know, here's basic format of the slide. You see the question up top for the following type of media. Please rank your top three with one being the most preferred. In the little box right up here, you see among total U.S. consumers, those ranking things that they have, things that they like in their top three, watching television on any device. Not surprising, number one. I mean, television is still the number one thing people like to do. It's not necessarily the subscription that's number one to them. It's not necessarily the products that are number one to them. But when asked to talk about media, they would put that number one. Surprising, reading newspapers. Look at the jump that happened there. And if you break it down into some of this population, you'll see it really even increased. The increase was actually out in the boomers and matures. Something happened in the last year, and quite honestly, we don't have anything definitive as to what that might have been, except that the boomers and matures are getting much more comfortable with being online. They are way behind the younger generations, but they're catching up quickly in some categories. That's what's really neat about this. When you look at past years, when you see what matures were doing 3 years ago, when you see what millennials were doing 3 years ago, matures are starting to adopt those. So you can see this kind of wave, and it's odd because it's going from youngest to oldest. I like to call it the grandchild syndrome. You know, if they don't get on things like Facebook, they're not talking to their kids. That's the only way to reach them. I think of my three kids who are 27, 26, and 22. There is no way their grandparents would ever hear from them unless they started getting onto Facebook, unless they learned how to text. So I would call my parents the digital elite of the matures. And they barely know that their phone is ringing. So that's kind of the basic layout of the slide. You can see the generational information here. So watching anything on TV, the boomers and matures, they were the TV generation. So they're the ones really driving that higher number. See the millennials, they're kind of dropping off, and you'll see in a moment how they're augmenting TV with something else. Next slide, Rob. Let's go into product ownership real quick. I'm going to go through these slides quickly. It's more or less to show you the depth of which we ask. We're not just asking about five products. We're asking about 30 different products or so. But standalone DVD is the number one owned product in the United States. And you can see some of the other top ones. Desktop computer, nothing surprising here. Digital camera, radio, AM, FM still there. Laptop netbooks, circled down here. See the increase there. Forgot to say in the beginning, 5 percentage points is considered significant from year to year. This thing's been rising pretty much 5 percentage points since we started asking about it. The laptop is starting to replace something called the desktop. And people are getting very, very comfortable, and I think you'll be surprised to see how dominant the laptop is. Flat panel TV also moving very, very rapidly up. It has been a huge success in the marketplace. Challenge I have for the flat panel TV is, besides size and besides thickness, what else are we going to do? Probably internet connected. That's probably a good solution, but it can only get so big and so thin. You know, 3D is obviously one of those things, but you can see 3D down here. Very low penetration, but people who have 3D really, really like it. A couple other ones here. Mobile cellular phone plans going down, being replaced by the smartphone down here in the bottom. A lot of people are surprised when they see 42% of households have a smartphone. I think we tend to think that more people have them. That's about it. We're going to surpass 50% this year. May have already done that, actually, with the holidays. It's really becoming the device that people are going to consume content on. DVR, you can see that it increased a bunch in the from 09 to 10. leveled out this year. Surprisingly, the DVR isn't more penetrated because it's one of the favorite way to watch television. So television could expand their presence if they had more DVRs out there. My belief is there's a lot of matures and boomers that don't even know they have a DVR in that set-top box that's sitting up there. I mean, surprising, but, you know, it really is true. A couple more here. Blu-ray, you can see coming up. E-book reader and tablets. Tablets just came on the scene, what, not even 2 years ago. Already 13% of Americans own tablets. And remember, we fielded this in the fall. I think Rob would tell you that number is much, much higher now after he did tablet. Yep. And we'll get to that in a second. Next slide. So hopefully you see how we asked a whole bunch of questions there. Here is when we ask, of those you own, which are your favorites? So here you get it. Laptop is number one, flat panel, desktop, computer, smartphone. Three screens of your life. I mean, it's very, very clear that that idea of three screens really is true. This is what people want to be able to do. And because of those three screens, they want to be able to move things between those three screens. And the scary part is, here's your fourth screen right here coming up. And so we would expect that to go up. If you ask it number one, well, forget the top three, what's your favorite? It goes laptop, desktop, flat panel, TV, smartphone. And what's really amazing, if you're trying to under... Oh, no, that's the next slide. That's fun. I'll wait for a sec. Let's take a quick look at subscriptions. And again, just to kind of walk through what are the ones that we ask a lot of... You know, we ask a lot of these things. You can see four slides. We won't spend a lot of time. Mobile is the number one subscription that people have. You can see some of those other ones, magazine, cable television, pay TV video. Traditional landline continuing its slide. We don't expect that that will stop. It's going to continue to drop. What's crazy is even the older generation has started to walk away from it. That's not something that necessarily even they feel they need, even though they grew up with that crazy little thing on the side of the house. I remember it hanging in my kitchen. Mobile cell. Next slide, please. Streaming video, a lot of people really focus on this, particularly the TV people. That is rising. If you think of that, 5% is significant. That streaming video rise from 10 to 21 to 30. We don't have a lot of TV slides in this. In fact, I don't think we have any. But the TV guys, when they look and they get people to talk about what's their favorite, streaming kind of falls down. But the fact of the matter is they are going to streaming. And we have some slides that will show how people are sourcing content from traditional versus new. Next one. It's just a couple other ones here. Subscribe to television shows, series via online outlets. Again, the younger generation is the one that's doing that. And there's just kind of the last one, some mobile television. Again, just to show you the depth with which we ask. So again, if you ask the top three, broadband, broadband, broadband. All three forms of broadband are number one, two, three. And in fact, if you ask what's your number one, it's broadband, broadband, broadband. It really is amazing to see how it stacks up, because right after that comes all three forms of entertainment. So whether it's Fios or fiber delivered, whether it's cable or whether it's satellite delivered. And then right after that comes your mobile phone. So, you know, it's really lining up. And what I like about when I talk about the broadband versus, you know, the satellite and cable, all of those things, is that the battle lines are drawn. I mean, you got two lines into your house. And, you know, you got some stuff going over one and some stuff going over the other. The most valued one is the broadband, because it's versatile. You can keep putting more and more stuff on there. And there's becoming a bigger and bigger demand from streaming to put more and more of the stuff on the cable onto the broadband. That's the real battle that's lining up. And if you have a question about how important broadband access is, or access period, look at dial-up internet access. What is it, number six? Small population, but those who can't get broadband and have dial-up, it's extremely important to them. So never underestimate how important that connection is. With that, we're going to quickly flip to advertising and then get in some fun things on tablets and content everywhere. Just from an advertising standpoint, television's still number one. Online is, you know, hanging in there, but, you know, it's kind of bouncing around a little bit. Magazines and newspapers, they've fallen, but still very, very strong. When you ask attitudinal questions about magazines and newspapers, people tend to trust those ads. They also find them a lot less intrusive than online ads. So, you know, if you're a magazine or a newspaper owner, or you're in that business, there's a lot to look at. This stuff isn't going away tomorrow. There's a lot of negative things out there for you, but, you know, it's still very, very strong in terms of advertising, which, of course, is probably one of the most important things you have to look at. when you look at online advertising, most influential, you know, the sponsored search results comes up. But look out here on this side. What's funny is it's the matures, boomers, and Xers who find those more influential. And what I've always thought about this, when I asked my own parents who were in their 70s, I go, why do you go to that? Well, it's at the top. Okay, do you notice it's in a different color? No, it was at the top. That's what made them go there. Yet the younger generation, they may move away from the sponsored search engine stuff and try to explore what else might be there to try to find other avenues there. But again, you can see we ask a lot of different questions about different types of advertising online, and you can see a lot of differences between the generations there as well. This is just some attitudinal questions. The first one there is, I would willingly be exposed to more online advertisements if it meant I could receive free content that I found valuable. Remained relatively flat. Not a lot of change there. It's this middle one that's fallen a little bit. I would click on more internet advertising if it was targeted to my needs. You hear so much in the advertising world. How do I target? How do I stop doing carpet bombing and do smart bombing? You know, there seemed to be some evidence that people would like to have that, but at the same time, it's not really changing a lot over time. And people over this time frame have gotten much more confident and much more familiar with what's going on in the internet. I would click on more internet advertising if it was targeted my needs. Again, the breakdown here. Here you can see when you go to the generational side, two groups have really driven any change there, boomers and Xers. Kind of odd. I mean, you know, you've already got it fairly high in the millennials. They're comfortable with it. They don't mind it. But you're starting to see it creep up into the older generations. These older generations tend to be much more skeptical of providing any information about themselves. Maybe that's one of the inflection points we need to look for. And with that, Rob, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot, Phil. Appreciate it. So I'm just going to take you quickly through some of the content pieces and some of the topics around Content Anywhere. So the big theme here is, you know, we asked methods for viewing new movies. What methods have you used to view a movie available for purchase or rental in the past 6 months? So the big takeaway is the growth of streaming. So you see the growth here from 2009 when we first started to ask about it, the net number, 28%. Now there's a jump to 42%. But you see overall the home TV number actually is growing, but then if you look down here, you see, you know, this you see the different breakdowns here of the different types. One of the themes we see overall, whether we look at movie content, TV content, to an extent music content, written content, and definitely books and magazines as well, is by and large our data shows that people are consuming more media. And when you think about that, there's probably a good reason for that. We have more opportunities, more time to consume media. It didn't used to be that we could consume media when we're in the shopping line to buy cereal, for example. Now you can. You have an opportunity to consume media, consume a news article there. So by and large, we're seeing that it's not so much a channel shift as it is an actual growth in the pie in terms of media consumption. And again, this starts to show a little bit of that. Favorite methods. Now this is interesting. Again, you probably have seen that the way we structure these slides is we ask, you know, what do you own or what do you subscribe to, and then what do you prefer? Look at the home TV net number. So it 93% in 2008. Look at that, how that jumped down to 69%, and then the various breakdowns. And then you see the streaming number here, 4%, now jumping up to 14%. And you see, no real surprise here. You see some of the different things here in terms of the generational dimensions where the younger generation is skewing towards its preference. But we are seeing some significant growth in streaming. Top six favorite methods for watching favorite TV shows. One of the things we talk a lot about is the bifurcation of the definition of the word television. So when we talk about television, we tend to think of it as what? We tend to think of it as this flat panel, or maybe for those of us who remember, a CRT device that we had. You know, we had these bunny ears, and we had this big circle that we put on top of our television. But there's two senses of the word television. There's now the device, and there's the television content. And increasingly, you have to distinguish between those when you talk about it. So, for example, when we talk about television content, what are we referring to? Referring to the 30-minute sitcom, referring to the 60-minute drama, referring to live sports, referring to news. That's different. The way in which that can be consumed doesn't necessarily need that it needs to be bundled in with the actual device that we call television at this point, and you're seeing that on here. Traditional versus online. Big jump, and then especially you see it on the trailing and leading millennials have connected their TV to the internet to view content. And then you see here, this is actually three questions bundled. What percentage of the TV programs you watch are from traditional sources versus online sources, you see that jump 25 to 31%. And then you see the interest in purchasing internet TV, extremely interested, very interested, somewhat interested. Those are pretty strong numbers at this point. Now, we should say that we intentionally don't over-ask, we don't over-prescribe what people mean by internet TV. So we leave it to the consumer to define for themselves what that interest is, because we would argue that that's still playing out in terms of what that actually means. So we're not saying that necessarily means a TV device that has the internet in it. It could mean some sort of, you know, an OTT box as well. It's up for the consumer to sort of understand what that
means.
Yeah,
and you know, Rob, just on that slide real quick.
Yep.
Those intender numbers, or the ones circled on the bottom of the page, when you consider how this switch is going between traditional and online, internet TV, you know, internet connected TV, when we asked that in products, I skipped over that, was about 12%. So there's another percentage of people out there who are saying they're connecting their internet somehow. Maybe it's through a game console or whatever. But if internet TV starts to take off, expect that there's going to be a huge opportunity for internet delivered content of some form. It may be different than what TV is, but the fact of the matter is, even if it's different, the trend is for people to move away from traditional and move into these online internet access content. So what might that be? So people here who are thinking about businesses in that area, I would tell you that that would seem to be a real sweet spot right now.
So now I'm going to switch for a second here to some of the data that we asked in the tablet study. And I told you before that the tablet study was not just about tablets, and this is a case in point. So we saw some interesting data around people potentially, the way in which they were shifting their usage around cable versus online in the state of media democracy. So we thought it warranted a follow-up. So here's the question we asked. Which of the following statements best describes you, your household, with regard to paid TV service? So this is data that was fielded in late January, early February. This is from, again, from our tablet study, but again, it's a multi-device study. So 66% of folks overall said they have paid TV service, no intention to change. I have paid TV service and considering changing, so the potential churners are 12%. I have paid TV service 4% and am considering canceling. I have canceled my paid TV service in the last 12 months. I no longer have any paid TV in my home. It's at 2%. And then people who simply do not have paid TV service and say they have not had it in their home for the last 12 months is a 15% number. So then of the people who answered the last four choices, these four choices below, they were then asked the follow-up question. And that follow-up question is, which of the following statements best describes your reasons for changing and or canceling and or not having paid TV service? So value and pricing. Although I can afford paid TV service, I'm not satisfied with the value and pricing of paid TV service. 41%. And then you can look at the way that skews. So trailing millennials. One thing to keep in mind with trailing millennials is they're the by and large the group that may still be living at home. For the Deloitters in the room, this is no surprise to see my backup trying to start. So that jumps up to 53%. I'm not satisfied with the programming availability for paid TV service. Another interesting number here, you're roughly holding steady on the generational numbers. But I'm not satisfied with the user experience, 4%, customer service, 4%. And then here's some interesting numbers here. So again, these are the people who we're asking them the reasons for canceling or changing. I'm able to get TV content I want or need through internet streaming sources. So 19% of those who answered one of those four choices below are citing that as the reason. And then you see the pop on the younger generations. And then just people who are presently not interested in internet TV content in some way, shape, or form. I'm not going to go through all these slides, but these are basically the breakdowns then among those particular. So we then are going down a further level in terms of drilling down. But I'll go down here, reasons for considering canceling. I'll go down here for reasons for canceling overall. Actually, yeah, I'll do that one. So which of the following statements best describe? So these are the people who have canceled. And again, you see value and pricing, 37%. Programming availability, 13%. And then 35% say is internet streaming sources. Now, I just want to, again, caveat. This is 35% of a relatively small group, right? This is not 35% of the total population. It's a relatively small group. But it is interesting that that's the reason that that's starting to come close to value and pricing. Again, I talked a little bit about, just kind of shifting gears for a second, talked a little bit about magazines and newspapers. And again, just showing that this is continuing to hold steady. in terms of what people are saying that they're continuing to purchase. So we're continuing to see, you know, magazine and newspaper subscriptions. Another interesting thing about our research is showing that there still appears to be a high degree of loyalty to printed magazines. There's something about the printed magazine and the form factor of a printed magazine that's yet to be translated over to electronic devices. People are still showing some loyalty there.
Just on that, just for the audience, I mean, typically we make this very interactive. When we're sitting there with four or five guests, we go back and forth all the time. Is anyone surprised by that? Is that like something that you said, wow, it never gets that? Or does that make intuitive sense?
Surprising?
That's pretty.
Yeah.
That they really don't like. But, you know, that in particular, they kind of smile. And it's interesting. If you just think about your own circumstance, we haven't gotten to mobile yet, but you know, even though I have some things online, I didn't cancel my subscription yet. I'm not necessarily sure why that is, except that, you know, there's that occasional time when, you know, that damn tablet device runs out of battery, or, you know, that annoying 30 minutes on an airplane. When they don't want me to have an electronic device on, that I need that physical form of it all. And that's some of the things we're talking about.
But if you're in the feedback on the planet, I think about more of the newspaper, I like the nostalgia behind it. I think about somebody who's walking down the street and you're thinking about an arm, and you said just being able to pop it out, flip it open, read it, and touching and feeling that paper.
You know, I don't know if we've asked the question, but I will tell you, Rob is about the most connected guy I know. And what happens every time you walk into my office, Rob? What's in your briefcase? When you're on?
I have the printed version of the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, that's right.
One more, then we'll go on. Because I just saw we had plenty of time for one.
How are the good counties looking at that the subscriptions
are supposed to match the final number of subscriptions? I just feel like there's a little bit of a gap that some of the things are very racialized things, and some of the things are very racialized and not being in the journal?
Yep. Yeah, it's
a good question. I mean, I think it's just one of the things that what people are saying they're doing versus what we're actually seeing at the data. You'll see that throughout. I mean, that's one of the things that why we do the study, because you know people are claiming that they're continuing to have these subscriptions, but the question is embedded in here, is there some form of access versus subscription to it? Are they actually paying for it? Do they have some other form of access? But I think it's a great question. Why is it that you're seeing these publicly disclosed numbers around this decline, but yet people are still claiming that they have it?
Well, you know, and the great part of any consumer survey data is sparse data.
Yeah.
They don't look remarkably different than the younger groups. I mean, well, newspapers tend to be very different. The young generation consumes all of their news on their laptop, their tablet, or their smartphone. And that's where they get it. They don't even look to a newspaper. Well, why don't we go on?
The presentation itself, as in this forum, will not. But if you ask me, if you just, you know, come up, I'll get you our public, you know, kind of summary of this data. Yep. Favorite methods for reading magazines. Again, this goes back to what we talked about, which is that the printed hard copy continues to stay strong. And now I want to jump into tablets and ebooks. So again, a couple things. Again, I'm gonna bifurcate a little bit through here with Media Democracy and the tablet data. This is sort of kind of one of the key parts of this presentation is I want to show you some of the brand new data that we do have on tablets from what we fielded last month. So again, which of the following media or home entertainment equipment does your household own? This is from State of the Media Democracy, so this is from our fall data. Among total U.S. consumers, 5 jumping to 13%. Leading millennials, 9, now a full 21%. Of the products you indicated you own, now you see that jump in terms of putting it in the top 3, so a full 26%. Put it in the top 3, trailing millennials, 24, 26. Again, remember the caveat. You know, our State of the Media Democracy presentation, fall, roughly the same number of U.S. consumers, but again, the tablet study that I'm going to show you, that will, again, skew a bit towards, again, what we call the digital elite, because, again, we're skewing towards people who own tablets, and intentionally we did that. Time spent online with tablets. Thinking about all the time you spend online with each of the following devices, how much do you spend? Again, look at this jump, 1 to 3. But you know, the overall note here is that people are still spending a lot of their time online, at least as of the fall, on the desktop computer, online with a laptop. So there's something here that shows that people are still not spending as much time on the tablet. My interpretation of this data is that people are. It's a bit back to the future. If those of you had, you know, a handheld device back in 1998, 1999, it's not unlike that sometimes with a tablet where you're getting on an airplane, you're syncing all of your content, but that you're not in an active online state as you're consuming content. If you saw that, I want to ask you a question. What does the audience think by and large, if you just had to guess, of people who own a laptop and a tablet, what do you think people, by and large, would say is the device they can't live without? They have to throw one in the trash. Which is the device they're going to keep? Just shout out answers. Laptop, right? So everyone agrees on that. Now, what would you think would be the generational skew? Which generation do you think would be most inclined to skew towards the tablet? And which do you think would be most inclined to the laptop? Which is most inclined to the tablet? The tablet's the device they're going to keep. What do you think? Older is going to skew towards what? Tablet or laptop? Tablet? Laptop? Okay, let's see. I think I heard all the right answers. So here's the data. You said you own both the laptop and tablet device. Which device is more important to you? That is, which device could you least do without? Trailing millennials, 8%. Again, this is only the people, 852 respondents in our survey, owned both a tablet and a laptop. 8% of the trailing millennials said that the laptop would go in the trash. 92% would keep the laptop. No generation index over 50% for the tablet, but then it gets to the matures with a 40%, 60% break. So it skews up like that. I thought that was kind of interesting. Anyone surprised by this? No? Okay. Tablets as a substitute for laptops, generational view. In the past 6 months, this is from Media Democracy, Have you ever left your laptop home and used your tablet as a replacement for your laptop's functionality to browse the web? Among owners of both a tablet and a laptop, yes, I've used my laptop as a replacement. So you see the numbers there, it's about half. Yes, I've used my tablet as a replacement for my laptop while at home. You'll see the jump up to 66% there. And then for the leading millennials, and then no, I've never used my laptop as my tablet as a replacement for my laptop. So this was from the Media Democracy. So then in turn, we decided that was interesting enough, we would then ask a follow-up question in the tablet study. So how often have you taken a trip in the last 12 months, regardless of purpose, involving an overnight stay away from your home, and brought your tablet but not your laptop? So we have all of your trips, most of your trips, greater than half of the trips. So what's interesting is now we're at a full 50% of individuals who own both devices who are claiming that they're taking trips where they're actually leaving the laptop at home, and 26% are saying I'm actually leaving my laptop at home and I'm just keeping my tablet. That's kind of interesting. It's very interesting too when you think back on that first question, which could you least do without? Because if it's a least do without, the actual behavior you're seeing here is least do without would seem to imply that these people would probably be inclined to be taking what? Their laptops, right?
So how many in this group have done that exact same thing? They go on a business
trip and they leave.
That's the
list
you're calling business group.
Right. Yeah.
So how many in this group have done that they left the laptop at home and only bought it?
So time spent online, thinking about, again, this goes back to the other thing we talked a second ago. Again, thinking about the time you spend online. The data we're seeing is showing that people are spending, less time online with a tablet than we might otherwise think. Tablets versus other devices for watching video. How frequently do you use the following devices to watch video content? Again, you now see this jump to 5%. Again, with the millennials leading the pack, 6% and 10% respectively. My generation, Gen X, is actually doing pretty well in terms of us starting to use the tablets to watch video. This is another kind of interesting question. So this question was, we do a lot of work, not only with our sector, but also with our retail sector and some of the other groups within Deloitte, and in consultation with them. They wanted to find out how people are using tablets in terms of their use to do product research. Now, I want to caveat that this is not asking what the sources of the data were, what sites you're on, but this is just the form factor of using your tablet to do some form of product research. So I'm not going to read this whole question, but basically it's asking, thinking about large purchases you've made in person at brick and mortar stores, how often are you using your tablet to do some form of research before you go into the store? So always 15%, most of the time 23%, some of the time 17%, and then you see the generational number. So people are, by and large, now using the tablet device as a device that they're going to pick up and they're going to use and they're going to do some form of research before they go into the store. Does that surprise anyone? I think we've all seen lots of stories about some of the brick and mortar stores, being concerned about some of this or potentially looking for ways in which, they can better enable some of their browsing, through the tablet. Any surprises on that one? Probably not, right? Okay. So then we also asked a question again. This is all the tablet slides you've seen so far are in that consumer study. We're now going to shift gears to the enterprise study in a second. This is the last one from the consumer one. Are you using your tablet for personal use, for work, or for both? Total, 7% work, 78% personal, 15% both. And then Xer, surprisingly, 4% for work, 83%, 13%. Why did I highlight the fact that that's the Xers? Because the Xers are in their prime working years. So you might have expected that the tablet would skew up, but in fact, they're actually, skewing down as compared with the millennials. Any surprises here? Any shocks?
Came about not because our IT department iPads is because the partners in particular brought iPhones in and said, I want to use this. And IT didn't have choice. And the same thing happened with iPads. And we do not buy iPads for our people. But you'd be shocked at the number of people who are using that now in our business. And given the mobile nature of an organization like Deloitte, we're now doing a lot in the area of figuring out enterprise apps. In fact, we made the acquisition of Ubermind, not just for what happens in the marketplace, but to help us, our own organization, think, how do we get more value out of these devices that are proliferating through our organization at an incredible rate of speed? So over time, I think we'll start to see that come up as the enterprise, particularly with 4G, starts to migrate to mobility.
Yeah, and maybe that'll permeate to such a degree that next year, if I present, I'll wear jeans. It's a joke. Thank you. I'm here all week. So now we switch gears. So remember, consumer. Now this is these are some questions from the survey that was fielded out to business users. So now we're asking about business use. This is percentage of overall time, and this is just a snapshot. So it doesn't add up to 100% because I didn't include all the other choices for the different types of devices. But thinking about the typical day, what percentage of work time are you using each of the devices? So of people's time, they're saying that 35% of their time is spent on a laptop, 5% is on a tablet. And then you see that roughly holds similar across the different company sizes. Again, and this is the way, you know, you're used to the generational slides now, hopefully. This is how we break it out for this is by the different company sizes. This seems to hold with what people said before, right? Which is that they're using, by and large, they're not using, you know, they're using their tablet device as more a personal device. But then when you ask them what they're thinking about in the coming year, do you expect to spend more, less, or the same amount of time using your tablet? So a full 65% of business respondents who use tablets at work claim that they're going to spend more time. And then again, that number holds across the different sizes of the companies, spend the same. And you see almost nobody is saying that they're going to spend less time. So there's a full expectation, if you look at the data, that while people are not using the tablet by and large in great numbers, lots of people have them, but people are saying they're not using them as much, or as much as they could, I should say. They're not using them as much as they could yet at work. There's a full expectation that they will be using them more in the coming year. Probably no surprise, but it's interesting that people are, you know, starting to think about that they're going to be using them a lot more. That's further boldened or further backed up by this next question. Below are devices that you stated you are not currently using for work. So now this is going to people who in the survey said they do not have tablet access, they do not use tablets at work. Again, this is the business survey. Which of the following do you wish you could use for work? So the intender number up here for tablet, really high, 64, 62, 63. So across the board, you see over 50% of people at these companies of you know, the full scale, across the board of different sizes, are saying they would like to use a tablet. So then that implies the next question. So are people going to buy tablets? Are people going to procure tablets or look for their IT departments to furnish tablets as some sort of trade-off? So the next question is, you mentioned that you are planning to acquire a tablet device within the next year. Which of the following statements best describes your intentions regarding tablet and or desktop laptop purchases? 13% said they plan to purchase a tablet instead of buying a new desktop or laptop. 20% of business users said they plan to purchase a tablet and plan to purchase a new desktop or laptop. But a full 62%, quite similar numbers to the ones before, said they plan to purchase a tablet device, but that has no bearing on their decisions around the purchase or procurement of a laptop next year. And then I plan to acquire a tablet within the next 12 months when my company issues one. And then just kind of shifting gears for a second, do you ever purchase ebooks? And we've seen some growth there, growing from 10 to 19%. Leading millennials leading the charge there. So, you know, almost a full doubling of total U.S. consumers who have purchased an ebook. And then ebook attitudes, please use the scale. So you see some attitudinal questions. This goes to what I talked about before. When I think about my book purchasing habits, I actually find myself buying more books in digital format. So what we're seeing is the availability of this channel, of this new digital channel for ebooks, is leading people, perhaps because of the more frictionless nature of it, it's causing people to press the buy button and buy more books. And we seem to see in the data that people are buying books that they're not actually reading. where they're buying more books by and large. I find myself buying more books than I actually read. And when I think about my book reading habits, I actually find myself reading more books in digital format than what I read in hard copy. And then I'll turn it over to Phil for just a quick wrap-up section on smartphones.
Just before we jump on that, does everyone who has an e-book here or an iPad that has a app on it for e-books, do you find you buy more books? Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely in that category. I buy a lot more books. I read a lot more books. I use it to explore. I mean, I'm not nearly as upset that I bought something that I didn't like. Oh, wonderful. We have a fire alarm. Oh, we were just getting a mobile. That's the fun one.
Check, check, check. Check, can you guys hear me? All right, so we'll do this very quickly because I want to make sure. I don't know if we're permitted to. I assume we're permitted to take a little extra time given the circumstances. So smartphone rising to 42%. And then you see the commensurate decline on the mobile cellular phone. I don't think there's any surprise there. How interested are you in purchasing a smartphone in the near future? You see a growth in the intenders number. One thing I should say about this is both people who currently own a smartphone, so replacement of the smartphone, as well as people who would be new buyers. So growth from 42% to 52%. Yep.
No, nothing.
Yeah, and then
you'll see
the jump here. Extremely interested, very interested, somewhat interested. What's interesting in this number is, again, this is U.S. consumers. The extremely interested number, 14% jumps to, I think it's 19% for African Americans and 20% for Hispanics. So this number actually shows some interesting variation across demographics.
Now, before you get off the slide, look at the variation down here. In a minute, you're going to see why that variation exists. You know, why are matures only saying 3% extremely interested? Well, these guys down here, the millennials, are up at that 22, 26, are extremely interested. If you add up, you know, these numbers here, what do you get? You get to like 31%. You add up those numbers there, it's three-quarters of the group is interested in getting a smartphone. So why would that be? Okay, I'd skip this slide. Here's why it is. Simply put, we ask people, what features are you currently using on your smartphone device or on your phone device? And what you'll largely find, and the numbers in red are in that color for a reason, if you kind of consider that anything that a group is using more than 50% or the majority are using as being significant, what you find is the matures do two things. They talk on the phone and they take digital pictures. That's it. Why do you need a real smartphone to be able to do that? I can do that on a feature phone. I don't need all this other stuff. They don't value it yet. Boomers aren't a heck of a lot different. Same thing except they add texting. But look what happens at the Xers, the leading millennials, and the trailing millennials. These devices are becoming extraordinarily important to them because their life literally is starting to be encompassed around those devices. And it's likely over time that we'll see the matures also start to adopt that. In fact, we don't have the slide, but Rob and I were flipping through some of the data sets on the tablet study, and lo and behold, when you ask a similar question around tablets, once that screen size increases, the matures and boomers use it a lot more.
Yeah,
so there's a screen size problem.
Yep.
This is just the next slide. Same thing. You can see by the time you get over here, you still get one over 50%. It's GPS that's really different between trailing millennials and leading millennials, and a lot of that is because trailing millennials don't drive. So they're not quite as interested in the GPS as the older group is. But, you know, these get into the single digits. These are still in the 20-30%. I would guess if we can go forward about 3 or 4 years, we'll find that 50% in the younger generation, there's probably 60 things they're doing. And, you know, it may sound like a big number today. I don't think it is. I think we're going to find our lives revolve around the smartphone for on the go, and it connects with everything else. This ecosystem, those four-screen ecosystem, becomes incredibly important. Just one other slide on this. And this said, okay, so you said you use those features. How frequently do you use them? So this is a summary of every day or weekly. And again, you see they're doing these things, not occasionally, but doing it all the time. And at this point, you get matures only have one thing. They talk on the phone. I always wondered why my parents got iPhones, because that's all they ever do. I don't think they know how to use it other than that. But it tells you, if you're in the smartphone business, figure out how to make user interface even simpler than it is today. Apps tend to be written for the younger generation. That makes sense. They're the ones using them. But I got bad news for everyone. These two generations hold the bulk of the wealth, at least in the United States. So figuring out what's going to help them, healthcare apps, banking apps, retirement-type apps, finding things locally is important to them. So how do you – I mean, I find it funny. You walk in and you get a smartphone – and it's all the preloaded apps are the same for everyone. Well, it's remarkably different what they're doing. I mean, what a crazy thing to do. So there's a huge opportunity out there in the marketplace to take advantage of that. This is a great slide, too. It really profiles it. When we ask the question, what value, when you get your bill, what value is there? Okay. What value do you get from that? And we broke it into three pieces: voice, texting, and data. You see the complete inverse relationship here. The older generation, 91% voice, that's what I got. It's what I value it for. All that other stuff, I don't care. Younger generation, particularly the trailing millennials, 21% is voice. I mean, the corollary to that is 79% must be texting and or data. And in fact, it really flips over onto that side of things when you start to add up everything and how it all plays out. I like to look at the texting and the data kind of snap together. And it really starts to show. I mean, data is becoming, you know, 80% plus of the traffic out there is now data. Voice is a very narrow band transmission. It doesn't really add much. And as we start to see more and more video, you know, you're going to come to a point where voice, I said 10 years ago, voice will be free. And I still believe that'll happen because voice is going to account for, you know, less than 1% of traffic on the network. So you got to bill for the data side. Anyone know how much data traffic on a broadband network is associated with email? Is it a lot or a little? Tiny, about 0.25%. Video is already over 26%. So everything's moving that way. I don't know if we have the slide in here. If we do, we'll see if it's the next one. If not, I'll just tell you. I don't see it, so I'll just mention it. When we ask the question, do you consider your mobile phone an entertainment device? 42% said, yep, we do. And that jumped from 30% a year ago. That's partly video. It's partly the fact that there's more content out there. I think it's partly the fact that they've redefined what they mean by entertainment. It's a broader definition. But they're truly looking for it. And you know, that's the overall. Obviously, the younger generation is a higher percentage. But they are looking to really drive more and more to that little device that's with them all the time. You know that if you lose your smartphone, it takes you about 2 hours to report it. You lose your wallet, it takes something like 17. Think about that. I mean, it could be a couple of things. First off, I mean, smartphone's more important to you. Second, it's you're reaching for your smartphone a heck of a lot more than you're reaching for your wallet. I mean, really interesting stuff out there on this. Impact on apps usage, you can see the percent that ever downloaded an app. I don't think that's the important thing on this slide. The important thing is, when I downloaded an app, did it cause me to affect my use of other devices, what I call single-purpose devices? And the answer is, it clearly is. You can see people are saying, I use this device less or not anymore. Things like traditional AM/FM radio, things like even e-book readers, they're starting to use their smartphone as a replacement for that. Portable digital music players, obviously we see that happening with things like the iPod as sales go down and average, or at least remain steady, but average selling prices falling. Handheld video games, more and more games coming to that device. So if you're in the single-purpose device side, boy, you got to really figure out a way to make things last for a long time because these devices are multi-purpose. Why don't we just skip that slide in the interest of time? Yeah, skip those. Let's go to social because I think this is something that's important and Rob would like to cover.
Yeah, I'm just going to do this really quick. So this is a question. Please indicate your experience with maintaining your social networking site. So you just see the total percentage of U.S. consumers who are spending some form of time on one of the social networks, maintaining their presence online. The big number here is you see the jump here, 10% to now a full 52% of matures are claiming that they're spending time maintaining a social networking site of some form. Please indicate how much you agree or disagree with the following statements. To me, the main value of social networking sites, they allow me to interact with my friends more frequently. Again, full 84%, 81%. And here's an interesting one. When I need to connect with friends, I think that social networking sites, IM, and texting are a good way to satisfy my needs, 85, 83, and then a full over 50% of trailing millennials and leading millennials answer yes to the following question. The time I spend interacting with friends electronically through IM, texting, or social networking is just as valuable as time we spend together in person.
Is that good?
It's kind of interesting.
I mean, seriously, I mean, this is an issue that I wrestle with and a lot of us talk about. Face-to-face, they're saying it's just as good to get online and do it, which I think allows them to extend their interactions. But is that a good thing that they feel that it's just as valuable as that time to spend face-to-face?
Great. So I'm going to leave it there because I know we have only a couple more minutes for questions. We have a couple minutes for questions given the... Okay. All right, so let's do a couple questions just to give us a little bit of time because we didn't get a chance to do that, but then we'll have to close it off because I know we have our official 10:30 cutoff. Yep.
I have a question about the demographic a little bit.
Yep.
But I think one of the drivers here is probably the business. I can't actually take a vacation trip, you guys probably don't know, without taking my
Right.
And so that's going to drive some of that behavior. Can you capture that somewhere?
No, I mean, not per se.
This is what the taking the tablet would do.
In that particular case, some of the behavior is going to be driven by what your business, the matures may not have jobs.
Right.
They may be abandoning things at different rates because of them.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is no. Well, the answer is if we ask it at that granular level, no. It gets a little hard. Consumers, they make a lot of interpretations. I always say with this data is, and by the way, that's a great question because maybe we should try to go that way. But you got to leave. You see, this is a long survey. This is not just 5 minutes. We have to keep it at a certain limit. So we struggle with that as to what goes in, what goes well. Literally, at a point, if you put something in, something's out of line. So some of that needs to be conjecture. So raising questions like that is exactly what we find when we talk with executives about this. Could this be this one day? Could this be this one day?
Great. Any other questions? Yep.
Are you guys going to start looking at those that are younger than that trailing demographic
that I can't? Yeah. So the third slide, you showed the 10 to 13 year olds. So we do use kind of a traditional Strauss Howe demographic definition for the generations. So that next group, the next 3 years in the next survey, we'll get a year more of Gen Y or millennials, if that's what you're asking. And then eventually in 4 years, we'll have to start once the first part of what they call Gen Z. Once they get to be 14, they would start to appear. So we do two slices of this, especially in the tablet data, where we look at the typical sort of advertiser Madison Avenue demographics of 18 to 34-year-olds, 35 to 45, and then 45 and over. But for this, we want to actually look at the pattern, so we're looking at the same group of people as they get older. But yeah, to your question, they will start to appear. It's just there's a slice of Gen Y we can't include because of just some of the regulatory and legal restrictions of that. Great. I think we're cut on time. Well, I appreciate everyone putting up with the fire alarm. But that was great. I hope that was helpful for everyone. Thank you.